Today I'd like to talk to you as we continue our study of Elijah, the 19th chapter of 1 Kings, beginning at verse 4. It says this: "But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree. And he asked that he might die, saying, 'It is enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am no better than my fathers.' And he lay down and slept under a broom tree. And behold, an angel touched him and said to him, 'Arise and eat.' And he looked, and behold, there was at his head a cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. And he ate and drank and laid down again. And the angel of the Lord came again a second time and touched him and said, 'Arise and eat, for the journey is too great for you.' And he arose and ate and drank and went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the mount of God." Well, he can't run any farther. The last time we saw him, he was running. And there's a few things that we see here. First of all, he's not thinking clearly. He had failed to recognize or consider the source of the threat. Now, you think about it. That threat had not come from God. It had come from just a human being. Yes, he's a king, but he's godless, and he's nothing in the power of God. So if he'd been thinking clearly, he would have thought, hey, God's in control, not Jezebel. Don't give a second thought to her threats. Trust God as you've done for years. You've got to, as my dad would always say, consider the source. And he could have and he should have, but he didn't. And he's not thinking clearly. Instead of praying, "Lord, I'm feeling myself drawn into this fearful thing. I ask you for strength right now." He's terrified. He's running. He's hiding. He also left relationships that would strengthen him. The Bible says he left his servant, and he himself went alone a day's journey into the wilderness. Discouraged people can become lonely people. And a broom tree deep in the wilderness has room for only one person underneath it. And beneath those branches, loneliness can set in. So he should have stayed with this friend, this comrade who could have encouraged him and strengthened him and given him some objectivity. And that's one of the best things he could have done. That's what happens when we look to somebody that can be an encouragement. Also, he had just won an amazing victory. And sometimes I've seen over the years that some of the times when you're weakest is after a great victory, especially if it's a mountaintop experience. Those are the times when we need to set a defense. And so that's what was happening. He was vulnerable. He had just had this big battle on Carmel, Mount Carmel, and it's only a memory, and his energy and his emotions, they've been at their highest, and now they're beginning to slide. See, it said emotion a plan to meet that counter assault. And he had to know that Ahab and Jezebel, after him doing all those things to those prophets, those priests of Baal, that those two would have responded. So he could have been ready, but since he didn't do that, he was weak and he was caught in a set of problems there. And then he's exhausted physically and he's spent emotionally. For years, he's been living on the edge. He's been hunted. He's been a wanted man. And he's been roughing it. And he's been starving. And now he's got this amazing confrontation. He's doing this in front of all the people of Israel and those priests of Asherah and the prophets of Baal. And there's no doubt that he thinks he's come to the end physically and emotionally. And that would weaken him spiritually. There's a Greek saying that says this: you will break the bow if you always keep it bent. In other words, if you're living under constant stress, you're going to finally break under the pressure, and you have to give yourself some time for refreshment, for rest. And we've seen this over the years. I like this writing from Spurgeon. He writes this actually to students, so it's applicable to youth, even though it was written about 100 years ago. The times most favorable to fits of depression, so far as I have experienced, may be summed up in a brief catalog. First among them, I must mention the hour of great success, when at last a long-cherished desire is fulfilled, when God has been glorified greatly by our means and a great triumph achieved, then we are apt to faint. It might be imagined that amid special favors, our soul would soar to heights of ecstasy and rejoice with joy unspeakable, but is generally the reverse. The Lord seldom exposes his warriors to the perils of exultation over victory. He knows that few of them can endure such a test, and therefore dashes their cup with bitterness. Excess of joy or excitement must be paid for subsequent depressions. While the trial lasts, the strength is equal to the emergency. But when it is over, natural weakness claims the right to show itself. Before any great achievement, some measure of the same depression is very usual. Surveying the difficulties before us, our hearts sink within us. Such was my experience when I first became a pastor in London. My success appalled me, and the thought of the career which it seemed to open up so far from elating me cast me into the lowest depth, out of which I uttered my misere and found no room for a gloria in excelsis. Who was I that I should continue to lead so great a multitude? I would betake me to my village obscurity, or emigrate to America and find a solitary nest in the backwoods, where I might be sufficient for the things which would be demanded of me. It was just then that the curtain was rising upon my life work, and I dreaded what it might reveal. Let no man who looks for ease of mind and seeks the quietude of life enter the ministry. If he does so, he will flee from it in disgust. And so it may not be that Elijah was disgusted, but he wants the Lord to take his life. And so now he's full of self-pity, and it's a pathetic emotion. It'll lie to you. It'll exaggerate. It's going to make you cry. It'll cultivate a victim mentality in your head. And it can bring you to the point of wishing you would die. And that's where Elijah's at. He says, I'm not better than my fathers. And nobody told him that he was. And so we need to, the advice we'd give to Elijah would be to rest in God, to trust in God. And so what happens? God meets him, verse 5. He meets his servant Elijah, and he sees that he's discouraged. And so he allows him a time of refreshment. He's not sermonizing, he's not yelling at him, he's not blaming him, he's not shaming him. He's just saying, look, I'm going to help you out right now. Take it easy, relax. You haven't had a good meal in a long time. And then he brings him freshly baked bread and cool and refreshing water. And he just is able to enjoy that. And so this exhaustion that can affect you emotionally, this fatigue that can make you imagine things. It'll make you even believe a lie. Elijah had believed a lie, and it's because he was tired. So God gave him rest and refreshment. And then Elijah went on 40 days and 40 nights in the strength of it. So today, who are you looking to for your strength? Please trust in the Lord.